I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Physical activity is good for the mind and the body. We are built to move. But with the pandemic turning our lives upside down and the stresses of managing family, work, health, and life in general these days, it's been tough to find the time and, frankly, the energy to exercise, especially with gym closures and warnings about social distancing. The appeal of binge-watching TV and the lure of comfort food have resulted in the quarantine 15, those extra pounds because of inactivity. The summer at least gave us the great outdoors for a walk or a run, but winter is coming, and then what? Well, help is on the way. Today on Radio Times, we look at the latest science of exercise and how to get the most out of physical activity, including reducing stress and depression. We'll also talk about exercise recovery and some simple, fast, and effective home fitness routines. Our guests are Gretchen Reynolds, and she's physical ed columnist for the New York Times, author of The First 20 Minutes. And Gretchen Reynolds, joining us by Skype. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Christy Ashwanden. She's fitness columnist for Elemental. And her most recent book is Good to Go, and it's about the strange science of recovery. And Christy Ashwanden, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Let me begin with some questions about the two of you, since you are fitness people. And Gretchen, I'll start with you. Has the pandemic in any way changed the way you exercise?
Well, I will say one thing. I had actually planned this year to do more running races than I've done in years, which was unfortunate timing because they've all been canceled.
Yes.
But what I actually have found that I have been doing more of and enjoying in ways I hadn't expected is getting outside and doing some actual intervals, which I hadn't done in years or had done relatively infrequently, and have found that my body is able to do it in ways that I hadn't thought. So even though I haven't been able to do any actual races, I have actually been running more than I had in years past.
Well, that's interesting. Christy, how about for you?
Yeah, it's so interesting what Gretchen said, because I was in the same boat. I had just signed up for this hill climb running race that I was starting to train for, and I was doing hill intervals and getting really jazzed for it. And then this happened, and it was like, oh, what's going on? And then, yeah. But I was also, I really like to bike ride too. And I just, I've been writing about COVID sort of nonstop, and it can be really stressful. It's just been really hard, being in it all the time. And so I actually just about a month ago bought myself a new road bike, replaced my old 20-year-old road bike. And I've been biking a lot, and I found that it's a really great escape from the news cycle and from the stresses of work. And it's kind of what's keeping me afloat right now.
Well, I think everyone, one of the reasons we wanted to do the show is just that I think everyone is just feeling the stresses of the pandemic and actually feeling that their life is turned upside down. And as we look into the future, Yeah. You know, this is here to stay. So we're at least for a while. So we have to figure out what we're going to do about it. Let me just ask you both quick questions about masks. And Gretchen, when you are doing your intervals, are you wearing a mask when you're out?
I happen to live in a place where I can go off and be by myself when I run. And that's a huge privilege, and I know it. There are trails nearby where I have pretty much the world to myself, me and my dogs. I always carry a mask with me. I have it around my neck. It's on a little chain. And if I see anyone, then yes, I pull the mask up. Otherwise, I pull it down. I find it, and most people, I think, would agree, the few studies that have been done suggest that it's very difficult to exercise with any intensity in a mask. It's quite uncomfortable. It does make it a little more difficult to breathe, does tend to increase your heart rate a little bit. It makes the exercise feel a little harder, and it definitely makes your face feel like it's in a sauna, all of which is not pleasant. But if you are going to be exercising around other people, if you cannot not just socially distance 6 feet, but socially distance about 30 feet between one another, then you really have to have on a mask. And that's that it is difficult. It isn't pleasant. And I choose the places that I will go outside to exercise based on whether I will be around other people.
And Chrissy, when you're bicycling, are you wearing a mask? What do you do about masking yourself?
Yeah, no, I don't. And I agree with what Gretchen said about, you know, if I am going to be in a place where I will be encountering other people, and it's not just, passing someone on the road or on a bike path, in order to get an infection like COVID, you need to get what's called an infectious dose. So it's not enough to just, you know, if you're passing by someone very quickly, the chances of becoming infected are very, very low. I've written about this. I actually wrote a column at Elemental about masking and exercise. And it turns out that if you are exercising in the mask and breathing really heavily like this, it actually reduces the effectiveness of the mask. You know, once that mask gets really wet, which is what will happen if you're breathing hard into it with your moist breath, the effectiveness is reduced. So what you need to be sure of is when you are exercising that you are doing it in a way where you are not being close to someone, particularly for any prolonged amount of time. If you're out on a hiking trail and you're passing someone, you know, keep your distance a little bit. That should be fine. You don't need a mask. But I do, like Gretchen, carry a mask with me when I'm going to be on trails where I might encounter someone. And so I can pull it up if need be to go ahead and pass. But the risk of transmitting the virus, when you're just passing someone not too close in the outdoors is very low. And so I think that, masking is something that we should think about. But I don't think that there's a good argument to exercise in the mask.
Well, let me put something else on the table. And just the fact that I think we're all living under stress. For some people, it's going to be tougher than others because of the conditions of their lives. And I think we know this, but I think this is a good time for a reminder. And Gretchen, I'll start with you about just the psychological benefits of moving, of being active, whether you're in a, whether you're running or walking. But I just want to spend a couple of minutes just to remind all of us about the mental benefits of physical activity. Can you speak to that?
Yes, and I could speak to that both from a personal standpoint and the science. I mean, personally, that there is no doubt at all that my mental health has been vastly improved by getting outside and moving. And like Christy, I've been doing a lot of reporting about coronavirus and, of course, dealing with it personally. I mean, we've had lockdowns. I've had friends who've gotten ill. Yeah. There's no doubt that everyone is feeling tremendous stress. And for me, being able to get out and move has been the best de-stressor available. It's also been the time when I feel least overwhelmed and most in control. And the science is quite clear that exercise of almost any kind, any amount, it can be minutes, minutes a week, will certainly appears to improve moods pretty much across the board. It's quite effective at both treating and reducing the risk for depression. It appears to be extremely effective at helping people deal with anxiety and also prevent anxiety. And it also, on a sort of more positive note, it does seem to make people feel happier. It's not just that it helps prevent bad emotions, but it does help people, by and large, feel better. It improves well-being. It does give people a sense of empowerment, of some control over first their physical body and then secondly sort of the situation in which they find themselves.
And Christy, even something as simple and basic as taking a 15-minute walk, even that is helpful?
Absolutely. And I just want to say, one of the things, so yes, I love to run and I bike a lot and all of this, but probably the most important part of my day is every morning after breakfast, my husband and I take my dog for a walk up this hill. There's a nice lookout. It's about a 20, 25-minute walk that we do at least once a day, but always in the morning. And it's just a wonderful way to begin the day. And it's something that sort of, I think having some sort of exercise ritual like that, it's important to note that that, you know, Gretchen was talking about intervals, and we both like to do sort of intense exercise, and that's great. Mm-hmm. But the exercise doesn't need to be at a really high intensity. I mean, just a walk around the neighborhood can be enough to really see these benefits. And in fact, when you look at the science, you get the greatest benefits just from getting off the couch, you know, from getting off the couch to doing even a 10-minute walk. That's where you get the most bang for your buck. And as you continue to do it for longer periods of time, there are still benefits. But it's really that first bit that's most effective for all of these health benefits and all of that. And so I think just finding some way that you can be active every single day. And the other thing about walking that's so nice is it gets you out of the house. You know, it doesn't matter where you live. There's somewhere you can go. And I think it's also a really good way to help you feel sort of connected to your community and your place and to really feel present in your body and in the world. It's so easy right now in this time of the pandemic to sort of circle into these, you know, feelings of anxiety, and you're in the house, not leaving, and just change of scenery can be huge.
Well, and I'm nodding my head, but I'm also thinking, Gretchen, of someone listening who says, yeah, easy for you to say, you know, I'm trying to do my job. I'm trying to help my children learn, go to school on Zoom. You know, I've got a million things going on in my life. How do I carve out, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to go take a walk? How do we deal with that?
Well, I would say, first of all, and this is not in any way to suggest that people are avoiding exercise, but there have been some studies of time usage that did, among people who said they had no time to exercise, and then often spent 3 hours a day watching television, and didn't really realize it. I know it's really hard to find the time, particularly if you think of exercise as a chore, as something that you have to add on to all these other responsibilities you have. But if there's any way at all that you can sort of reframe that exercise as an opportunity to have a moment to yourself, an opportunity to have a little time with your spouse, an opportunity to have some time with your kids that's away from the Zoom. I wrote a column this week, actually, about the topic of what the scientists called awe walk. So that's A-W-E, which consisted of 15-minute walks once a week, in which they told a group of older people to go for a walk and really get out of your head at least part of the time during that walk. Look at the world around you with fresh eyes, even if it's a walk you do all the time. Look at the leaves on the trees. Look at the light coming off the skyscrapers around you. Really take a moment to look at the world and not think about what's happening to you. And they had another group that they didn't tell them look for awe. And at the end of 8 weeks of these really short bits of movement, the awe walkers were happier and had a better sense of belonging than the other group. And that was 15 minutes a week.
Well, you know what? Hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break. We're talking about how to stay active during the pandemic. That's Gretchen Reynolds. Also with us, Christy Ashwandan. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about how to stay in shape in the middle of a pandemic, what we can all do to stay fit and healthy, how to protect ourselves and others from the virus when we're exerting ourselves. We'll be talking about how to avoid injuries and how to start, maintain an exercise regimen. And again, our guests are Christy Ashwandan. She's fitness columnist for Elemental, wrote a book last year called Good to Go about the, quote, strange science of recovery. We'll talk about that. Also with us is Gretchen Reynolds, a phys ed columnist for the New York Times, and her book is The First 20 Minutes. You can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can always tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, questions or comments. Christy, let me read something that Mary tweeted at us. She says, it's not enough, but I've started getting up every half, started getting up every half hour, going downstairs, walk around the kitchen table and back up. It's helping me to keep focused, otherwise outdoor walks. But I'm not sure what I'll do when the weather is bad and the sunrise is late. So let's talk a little bit about what happens when, you know, it's 30 degrees out and there's ice on the sidewalk and we don't want to go to the gym. What should we do to stay active and healthy? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's really great to have a plan in place beforehand, especially, you know, it's just inevitable that there will be, I mean, even in the summer, there can be bad weather. Sometimes it's too hot, right, in the summer to go outside. And so there are a lot of options here. I really like this fix that the listener had, you know, just walking around the house, having some sort of ritual or place that you can walk inside. There are, of course, all sorts of indoor activities you can do, like strength training routines. You could get an exercise bike, a treadmill. You know, I'm not a huge fan of running on a treadmill or riding an exercise bike, but when it's the best option, it can be pretty damn good. And there are also some pretty neat programs now that you can get, apps and things for your phone or computers that can make riding a bike indoors or going on the treadmill much more interesting, where they can sort of replicate this experience of being outside. It's not quite as good, but they can sync up with these things to make the terrain change a little bit and harder or easier. So there are a lot of options. And if you go online, I mean, there's a whole wealth of different fitness routines and videos that you can find. And so I think the key here is to figure out the kind of thing that you want to do. Say, okay, I want to ride a bike indoors. And so look into seeing what your options are there. Maybe you want to do a treadmill. But again, these things aren't necessary. You can do laps around your house. That can be perfectly acceptable.
And I think the operative word is, what do you want to do? I mean, what do you enjoy doing? I mean, no one wants to do something you don't want to do, right?
I really liked what Gretchen said earlier about shifting the mindset. If you're looking at this as a chore and something that you have to do, it's never going to become a habit for you. It's not going to be something that you enjoy. And so I think it's really great to figure out what is something that you like to do and that's pleasurable for you, because this really should be a pleasure. I mean, it can be dancing. Put some stupid music videos on the TV and just dance in your living room. You know, it can be that easy, but find something that's fun for you.
Gretchen, let me read a comment from Joan, who says, hoping your guests will remember differently abled folks in their advice. For people with disability, exercise is still necessary, but our choices can be limited. I'm so discouraged by recommendations that are completely inaccessible being touted as, quote, anyone can do it, when in reality, anyone able-bodied with a car can do it. Folks with good athletic ability cannot begin to fathom the humiliation and exclusion that folks with physical disabilities face when trying to exercise. Can you speak to Joan's comments and her concern? It's important.
I'm really glad that she wrote in, because that is an issue. And I'm sure Christy would agree that those of us who write about exercise need to more often consider the difficulties and obstacles that exist for people who are differently abled. I mean, I write about walking all the time, because walking is great exercise, and we do tend to say, and anyone can do it, and it obviously is not true. I do think there are an increasing number of options online for people who are differently abled in one way or another. And you can find physical therapists who will help you create exercise programs that are appropriate for you. I would not give any advice to anyone, because I'm not an expert on how to exercise if you have a disability. But I would suggest that you get online and look for a physical therapist, a program that is designed for your particular abilities and disabilities. And many of them are free. More of them are free probably than before the pandemic. And you can often do them at home. You might need to see a physical therapist just to make sure that you do any particular exercises correctly. Form is going to be really important. I mean, it's important for all of us, but it's particularly important if you have any sort of disability. But I do think there are options. There should be more. And I should, and all of us who write about exercise should be more mindful of that. And I personally will try to be.
Fair enough. Chrissy, let me segue from that to older people. I mean, as you get older, you tend to, you know, have more aches and pains, perhaps lose muscle, perhaps even less limber. What do you suggest for older people, even people, let's say they have been active their whole life, but they're just finding, you know, it hurts. What can I say? Yeah. And I'm speaking a little bit from personal experience. But yeah, go
right. Yeah. So a couple of thoughts here. The first is that strength training becomes extremely important as you get older. I mean, it's important no matter what age you are, but as you get older, you start to lose muscle with age. And so if you're not using it, if you're not building it, that means that you get weaker. And so it's not just about being able to do these exercises, but activities of daily living. And so I think it's really important as you get older to make sure that you're doing some strength training. And it doesn't take a lot. You don't have to do it 5 days a week. I mean, 2 days a week is sufficient. You don't have to do, you know, three sets of exercises. You can do one set sort of to fatigue, and that's fine. And there are all sorts of really wonderful apps and videos and things where you can do, I mean, it can take as little as like 7 minutes. There's a 7 minute workout. I've seen a 10 minute workout. And a lot of these exercises are things that you can do at home without any sort of equipment. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is that, you know, if you are experiencing pain, and even just sort of the aches and pains of getting older and all of that, I think the key is to find something that doesn't hurt too much. For a lot of people, that's walking. Bicycling is a really great activity for most people. But the other thing is that sometimes if you're sort of having some sort of joint pain, there's an inclination to think, okay, I need to stop and I shouldn't exercise. And actually the exact opposite is the case. One of the best things that you can do for joint pain is exercise that joint and move it through the full range of motion. Now, if you're having severe pain, you don't want to be exercising through an acute injury. But if it's just the kind of achiness, you know, that can kind of come and go with age, then I think exercise is extremely important. And it's actually more important that you're exercising those joints and doing something. And so finding an activity that isn't too hard on the joints. So swimming, anything in the pool is good. Biking, walking tends to be good. But find that thing. This goes back to the earlier point of find something that you enjoy and that feels good.
Speaking about short exercises, Chrissy, you mentioned, you know, just maybe 7 or 8 minutes a couple times a week. I'm looking at one of the headlines of your stories, Gretchen, the 4 second workout. I mean, how little can we work out to get the maximum benefit?
It does look like, without being facetious at all, absolutely anything, and that includes 4 seconds, can make a difference. In that case, it was 4 seconds of what they call all-out exercise on a specialized type of stationary bicycle. But if you did it repeatedly throughout the day, it actually led to pretty significant improvements in metabolic health. And that was 4 seconds. I'm a big fan, too, of the whole concept of what some researchers call exercise snacks, which basically mean throughout the day you do a really small amount of movement. And one of the best things people can do, and you can even kind of make it fun, is go up and down stairs. That's a really good workout. And there's also fine science showing that if you do, say, 20 seconds of stair climbing repeatedly throughout the day, so it adds up to maybe 2 minutes, you've gotten a good workout and you've gotten enough to actually improve your aerobic fitness, potentially affect your metabolic health. And that's without doing anything else. Just snack on exercise constantly throughout the day.
I love that idea. That's Gretchen Reynolds. She's phys ed columnist for the New York Times. Also with us, Chrissy Ashwanden, and she is fitness columnist for Elemental. And we're talking about staying fit when the pandemic seems to have limited some access that we've had to activities, things like gyms and related facilities. And you can join us. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me read a couple of comments. And then, Chrissy, I want to ask you about stretching. An email from Kathy. She says, I find I need to get outside every day. One of the benefits to walking the neighborhood is it gives me encounters with other people, whether I know them or not, often sparks a conversation. Living alone, it is easy to become isolated. An email from Dave. I gained some weight while the gym was closed. The gym is back open. The pounds are coming off. You get used to the mask. This is temporary. Let's stay optimistic. An email from Andrew. I would like to draw attention to the Recovery Streets effort and coalition, which is looking to designate streets around the city to be prohibited from vehicular traffic to give people a safety when exercising outside at social distances. And this is in Philadelphia. He says MLK Boulevard and West Fairmount Park has been done this way since the pandemic opened. It's been great, but we should do more. Chrissy, let me ask you about stretching. And I know this is part of what you wrote about in your book. And I think we've all been told, you know, before you do any particular kind of strenuous exercise, it's important to stretch. What is your conclusion about stretching?
Yeah, I was really surprised, actually. Yeah, I went to look at
Me too,
at all
I have to
the,
say, yes.
Yeah, the scientific research on stretching. And turns out all these things that people are told that stretching does, like prevent injuries or you know, improve performance or reduce soreness.
You know what, Chrissy, I hate to interrupt you there, but we are...
None of those pan out. You know, there's a lot of people that believe that that stretching does that. But when they've done these large-scale studies and they've taken groups...
We are having some technical problems with Chrissy. I'm going to go back to her on that. We'll have our engineer and producer try to figure out if we can get her on some kind of a better line. But Gretchen, can you speak to the whole stretching? I don't know if it's a controversy, but sort of what's at stake here? Go ahead.
One of the most popular and controversial columns I ever wrote was actually back the week that the first time that Barack Obama was elected president, and it was about why most people don't need to stretch. Wow. And it was actually more emailed for several days than the news about Barack Obama being elected.
That's wild.
Yes, it was wild to really? Me too. Which also shows how long the whole sort of controversy has been going on, since that it was going on before I wrote about it. And that science at this point is pretty clear that most of us do not need to worry very much about stretching. I rarely stretch anymore. If you're a world-class gymnast, if you are a hockey goalie, where flexibility and the ability to move your muscles very quickly in very strange directions, you might need to be stretching. For most of us, it's quite likely that it will not prevent injuries, and that includes runners, especially if you do it beforehand. It might actually even wind up making your muscles somewhat tighter. We think that it makes them looser and more flexible, but it looks like it actually tends to make them a little stiffer. And so you're much better off warming up before exercise with what is generally called a dynamic warm-up, which basically means you're moving your joints through the range of motion by moving. And if you're a runner or a walker, that mostly means you start out running or jogging or walking a little bit more slowly, and that will get you ready to move better than sitting on the ground and stretching towards your toes. So, and for most of us, until you're probably in your 50s, you don't really need to worry a lot about stretching in terms of keeping yourself limber. Once you get towards your 50s, things all start tightening. And then it's probably a good idea just so you feel better, so your back feels better. But it's not going to do a lot. If, however, you like it, go ahead and stretch. It probably won't hurt anything. Some people love stretching and love yoga, love everything. That's fantastic. Go ahead. It won't hurt. It almost certainly is not, for most people, necessary.
We've got Christy back on her cell phone. And Gretchen, I think, took care of the whole stretching,
put that controversy
to rest for us. But I'm wondering.
I want to just add something really quickly,
please
though.
Do.
And that is that if you are looking to increase flexibility, it turns out that strength training is actually a really good way to do this. And I think that this is not intuitive. But what strength training does, if you're doing something like squats or lunges, things like this, any kind of strength exercises where you're moving your joints through a range of motion, that's actually very effective at increasing your flexibility. They've done studies on this and found that that, in fact, is what happens. So stretching is not the only way to increase flexibility, and it might not even be the best way.
Hmm. Well, let me pick up on squats. And Christy, I'll go back to you, which is what people can do and perhaps should do if they're home. You know, they're not going to personally, you'll never find me at a gym. I don't like gyms. Yeah. I don't find them attractive places that where I want to be. I do other things. But if people are home, they don't want to go to a gym, squats. What else can we do to make sure that we stay in shape?
Sure. Squats are great. Push-ups. Lunges, there are all kinds of other things you can do. Wall sits, where you're sort of putting your back up against the wall and have your legs at a 90-degree angle. You can do leg lifts. I mean, if you look online, there's a whole array of different strength exercises that you can do like this. You can jog in place. You can do, you know, an aerobic routine. You can dance. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, so often we think of exercise as sort of this chore, this thing that you're doing, but it can be something pleasurable like dancing that you enjoy doing.
I wonder to you, Gretchen, and just listening to both you and Christy talking about health and fitness. I mean, what does fitness look like? And do we have a kind of skewed vision of what a fit person looks like? Gretchen?
Well, we certainly have a skewed vision of what a fit person literally looks like, because you can be quite fit and not be skinny. That's an important message to get out there, is you can be any weight that you are at and still be fit in terms of having what we call a high aerobic capacity. And there's really good science that the best sort of measure of longevity, of how long you are likely to live and how healthy you are likely to be, is actually your aerobic capacity.
Oh,
and so, yeah, it's a better measure than all sorts of other things that we look at, including BMI.
Well, so, you know what? Hold on. I'm sorry to do this to you, Gretchen. We have to take a very short break. We'll pick up on that after the break. Stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Gretchen Reynolds. She is phys ed columnist for The New York Times. Also, Christy Ashwanden, and she is a fitness columnist for Elemental. And we are talking about staying fit during the pandemic. And I had to jump on you there, Gretchen, only because we're up in a break. But you were talking about aerobic capacity, that's really the criteria for fitness. Just explain what that means.
What it is, in very technical terms, they call it VO2 max, which is basically how much oxygen you can take in and get to your muscles. And it's a measure, I mean, it is a measure of how fit you are. Mm-hmm. And it does tend to decline with age. We can't completely stop the decline, but you can keep it much higher by just moving around, and also by occasionally trying to get yourself a little bit out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. That's actually the best way to sort of maintain and or increase your aerobic capacity. And that basically means if you are a really, you know, if you like to walk all the time, once in a while, look for a hill, walk up a hill, or look for the tree down the block from you and try and walk a little faster. If you can get yourself out of breath a little bit, that contributes a lot to your aerobic fitness. And it aerobic fitness does not mean that you must be thin. It just means that you are in shape.
And it's exerting yourself a little bit, I guess, what, getting your heart rate up. And if you're panting, how about sweating? And let me give this to you, Christy. Is that a good sign of doing a good workout?
Yeah, I mean, I think sweating is showing that you're working a little bit harder, right? If you're exercising and not sweating, you're probably going at a low intensity, which, again, is not ineffective. But if you're wanting to really get a lot of bang for your buck in terms of getting this aerobic workout in, then going a little bit harder, like Gretchen's saying, can be really beneficial. And, you know, sweating, having that sort of heavy breath is an indication that you're working harder, and that's good. That's how you will improve, and you'll notice benefits. You know, if you continue to do that, what you'll find is, oh, wow, this hill that I've chosen to walk up all of a sudden is starting to feel easier, or, you know, this sprint that I'm doing, you know, from here to there all of a sudden doesn't feel quite as strenuous. And so I think those benefits will become very tangible.
Let me read a couple of more emails. One from Sue. I started going to the gym three times a week about 10 years ago after my doctor said I needed it to strengthen my core. I've been faithfully going to those classes, but with COVID, I didn't want to stop. So now I exercise to a YouTube video the same three mornings a week and add some exercises we used to do in the class. It feels great. And I can do it when I'm ready rather than having to drive to the gym at a certain time. Here's an email from Chris. And actually, Chrissy, I want to give you a chance to respond to it. He says, I'm listening from the attic where the weight machine is. I've used the pandemic as an opportunity to not have an excuse not to work out, but it would be great if your guests could chat about avoiding injury while working out, especially for us older folks. And you wrote a whole book about recovery from injury. Christy, any sort of basic things we should think about when it comes to, I guess, either preventing or dealing with injuries related to activity?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that I would say is it's really important to build slowly. So you don't want to go from not exercising to, say, running 6 miles. If you're starting a weight training program, you want to start with light weights or maybe no weights, you know, doing it to sort of go through the range of motion and then gradually build. One of the best ways or easiest ways to get injured, I would say, is just doing too much too fast or increasing your workload too much. And so one way to help you with this is to keep a training log so that you can really be cognizant and very careful about how much you're building from week to week. And it is important to increase. So if you're doing strength training, you want to do a few more reps from one week to the next or add a little bit of weight, but you want to do this gradually. So that's one thing. A warm-up seems to be helpful. Again, stretching is not the way to do this, but you don't want to go from 0 to 50, you know, on your first few strides. Sort of easing into the workout can be really good. You know, with strength training, maybe doing a warm-up set where you're, you know, if you're doing bench press, say, maybe you do a few reps without weight to begin with, then you put the weight on so that you're sort of bringing your joints through that range of motion beforehand. And I think the other thing is just paying attention. So mm-hmm. if you start to feel some sort of twinge of pain, particularly in a joint or something like that, paying attention to it and maybe easing off a little bit. Another really easy way to get a long-term injury is to kind of push through it if you're finding yourself in pain like that. So if that begins to happen, figuring out a way to adjust so that you're not in pain.
And Gretchen, just thinking about recovery, I mean, rest, I guess, is one thing. I never know whether do you put heat on it? Do you put ice on it? Is there a correct way to do what you should do if you have some kind of a injury because of activity?
It sort of depends on who you talk to.
Okay, I figured.
And Christy and I can probably both talk about this. I would say the science right now, and it could change again, suggests that you will not get much benefit from ice. And it potentially has downsides in terms of how well the tissue recovers. If you actually have acutely injured one of your tissues, if you have an acute injury, it looks like icing it does not help. Everyone ices. Athletes believe in ice baths. There's very little evidence that those are helpful. and some evidence that they are counterproductive. Heat may help. The very best thing you can do if you have an injury is rest a little bit and then start moving again as soon as it feels comfortable. It does look like loading tissues that have been hurt does help them heal. You just have to give them just enough time to start healing and then sort of help continue that process.
I know we could go back and forth, and there's probably a lot more we could talk about recovery, but I want to read an email from Peter, who is upset at the advice around wearing masks and exercise. He writes that plume studies show that the plume is 30 feet for a cyclist or runner, more concentrated because exhalation is more forceful and more rapid than a walker, and says that a mask that gets wet can still work, wants people to wear masks while they are exercising. Christy, if I can toss that to you. He's taking issue with the advice, frankly, both you and Gretchen gave out.
Yeah. So there was early on in the pandemic, there was this study, and I say study in air quotes because it was kind of like a modeling study, but that got a lot of attention online where they were looking at how people breathe and sort of extrapolating from that to say that running and cycling past someone was very dangerous. I don't think that these have held up. Now, that said, if you are going to be around people for any period of time, in order to get COVID, you need to get an infectious dose. So it's not enough to get one viral particle. Probably it needs to be more. And so what you really want to be avoiding is any prolonged time sort of breathing that same air that someone's exhaling. And so if someone's going by you for a short period of time, there's just not going to be enough of an infectious dose in that for you to get infected, we think, the best available evidence right now.
And I know
Gretchen has any.
Yeah, I was thinking about the aerosol droplet issue, but just to give you a chance, Gretchen, to respond as well. I mean, we're not seeing marathon races anymore because you've got people who are all crowded together, correct?
Well, we are going to see one this weekend.
We are?
London is marathon, but only for the elites. It's not a full marathon. It's basically just the elite runners. And this will be the first, really elite race that we have seen since the pandemic. And they're doing it on a closed course. It's a small field. They're not wearing masks. They're supposedly in a race pod where everyone is in the same hotels, all of that. It's definitely the first experiment this way. And I would say that the study that Christy was talking about, which I also wrote about droplets released by runners and cyclists, did suggest that essentially it's not a good idea to stand or be right in the slipstream of someone who's running. And again, this has not been confirmed, but it does look like most of the droplets go right behind you. It just makes common sense. Don't get right behind someone. If you're all running together, you can stand, you can just move out of their slipstream, and then probably everything is fine. We don't know. And as Christy said, you would probably have to get a lot of droplets from someone who is infectious. And presumably most people who are out exercising probably are not infected. We don't know. And clearly, if your local regulations call for masks, then wear masks. There's just no doubt about it. My feeling is it's also just polite to other people. If you really cannot wear a mask when you're exercising, then find somewhere you can exercise that is not around other people.
Yeah, what I see, is people giving other people hugely wide berths just to make sure there is that 30 foot or even more. Let me just toss out a couple of other things. A tweet from Colin who says, I've read that exercise often leads to overeating and weight gain. Might that be especially true in times of stress when so many are trapped at home near the fridge and the pantry? Can you speak to that, Christy, about exercise and weight gain? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so exercise is not usually associated with weight gain. In fact, intense exercise can sometimes suppress appetite, at least on the short term. But I think where people really go astray here is they think, okay, I exercise, and so now, therefore, I've earned the right to, you know, overindulge or eat a lot more. And so people sort of regularly overestimate how many calories they're burning during exercise. And in part, I think this is because when you're doing these calculations, you forget that if you were just sitting on the couch, you would be burning a certain amount of calories. And so the exercise is on top of that, but it's not a, you know, it's not entirely beyond that. And so that's one thing. So I think that the key here is to realize that if you're exercising, you do have a higher caloric need, but it's probably not as high as you would like it to be.
So you don't have to you shouldn't reward yourself with a giant piece of chocolate cake, something like that.
Right. But I also just think, actually, I think it's just unhealthy to think of exercise and weight as like one of, like, you shouldn't be exercising just to burn calories or to use it as like punishment or reward. Look, it's fine. I personally enjoy a nice cold beer after a hard bike ride. But I don't kid myself that, you know, doing the bike ride is somehow canceling that out. This is like something that I would be doing normally. And I think from a psychological perspective, it's good to sort of exercise for its own sake and for the health benefits. When you start tying it to weight, I think that can be really difficult, in particular because exercise is not an easy way necessarily to lose weight. It can definitely improve your health and all of this, but the studies that we have suggest that caloric restriction and dieting is actually a much more effective way to lose weight than just exercising. So if you're exercising purely to lose weight, you may end up giving it up because it probably won't be quite as effective as you'd like.
Gretchen, let me read an email from Needy who says, would your host mind clarifying that yoga is not just for stretching? Yoga is also great for building strength and mindfulness.
Yes.
yes, right?
It is, yeah, and particularly for strength, and that there's some really good evidence that it can build strength as well as going to the gym and using weight machines. So yes, it is very effective for that, and it is quite effective at combating mental health issues. It can be quite good at dealing with anxiety, depression, and just making you feel better. I certainly did not mean in any way to demean yoga. I think yoga is terrific.
Here's a comment from Chris from Reading. I never realized how much exercise I got at my office going up and down the stairs all day. Now I'm home in an apartment and I can feel my legs have lost muscle. Christy, let me ask you about drinking water. In your book, you talk about the fact that there's a tendency to drink too much water. Help us understand, especially if we're exercising hard, about the role and place of drinking water.
Yeah, this is really interesting. You know, we have so much marketing now around hydration. There's a whole hydration industry, believe it or not. But yeah, whether it's sports drink companies or bottled water companies, we're always being told to hydrate, you need to drink more. When in fact, it turns out that drinking too much can actually be dangerous. And I'm talking deadly dangerous. We have now had multiple people who have died during or after marathons from drinking too much water during the exercise. And so it's really dangerous to force yourself to drink during exercise. And the good news here is that the advice, the best, and this is the most scientific, you know, science-based advice that I can give, is to simply drink to thirst. Your body will tell you when it's thirsty and when you need to drink. And drinking to thirst is actually a really, really good way to make sure that you're properly hydrated, that you're not overhydrating. Being underhydrated, of course, is not good either. But, you know, when you get to that point, you'll get thirsty and your body will tell you that it's time to drink. So it's just a terrible idea to force yourself to drink and to try and drink on some sort of pre-planned schedule. Now, if you're doing some long exercise, I think it's very important that you plan to have hydration available, that you bring a water bottle and you have some fluids available to you. But you absolutely should not force yourself to drink when you don't feel like it or when it's not tasting good to you.
Well, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. Christy Ashwanan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And she's fitness columnist for Elemental, author of Good to Go. Gretchen Reynolds, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And she's a phys ed columnist for The New York Times. Her book is The First 20 Minutes. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. And you can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.